Welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Thursday, February 8th, 2024. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me. We've got huge news today from Russia. The former Russian president, Dmitry Medvedev, is now saying that if NATO attacks Russia, that Russia will have no choice but to use essentially nuclear warheads against Western Europe. And of course, we're on a collision course right now in terms of world history, because the West just can't resist waging World War III against Russia. It's like the West is on a suicide mission. They want Russia to nuke them. And as Medvedev here says, well, Russia is willing to oblige. In fact, he's explaining that they're forced into this situation. They have no other choice. We'll get to that in a minute. We also have a powerful interview coming up today with John Bowdoin, who he's acquired, I think it's 400,000 records, death records. I think it's from the state of Maryland, if I'm not mistaken. It's one of the East Coast states. Anyway, all the details are in the interview, but he's got 400,000 death certificates that prove that there was a massive criminal conspiracy in the medical system run by the state to falsify the number of COVID deaths that were happening. No, I think it's Massachusetts. That's the state that he's talking about. Yeah, that makes sense. It was in Massachusetts, and they falsified the records in order to, of course, push the pandemic, push the fear, and also to financially benefit the pharmaceutical companies that are very prominent in Massachusetts. You know, Massachusetts is like a big pharma state, and they make all kinds of money when everybody freaks out over a pandemic and everybody demands vaccines and vaccine mandates are pushed everywhere. So John Bowdoin has the smoking gun evidence. He got it after, I think, 7 attempts at Freedom of Information Act requests. Finally, they gave him the information on the last attempt, and he is able to put that together. He's sharing that with us today in this bombshell interview. By the way, I apologize again if you hear any humming in this recording. That is the server that's in my office here. It's one of the experimental servers that we're using for our large language model AI training project. And I do have a solution to relocate this server, by the way. It'll happen probably this weekend. So only a couple more days of that hum. By the way, did you know it's the NVIDIA GPU cards that do all the computational work on these AI models? And I don't know if you knew this, but there's a huge difference between NVIDIA cards that sit in servers versus cards that sit in regular computers or workstations or like gaming rigs. And you know what that difference is? It's whether or not they have their own fans. So like a consumer grade GPU or graphics card, like a high-end gaming card that's in somebody's, you know, desktop computer, that has its own fan. So it's blowing air through, you know, all of its own processors to cool them. High-end server cards do not have fans. They rely on the server itself to push air through the chassis to flow over all the heat sinks of these server level cards. And that's why these servers have fans that are so freaking loud. That's the root of the problem that I'm talking about here. It's like, oh, wow. So I think next time I buy a server for this, I'm going to get a liquid cooled server because they're a lot more quiet. There's just water running, circulating inside closed loops instead of all these high powered fans. Anyway, interesting stuff. But every time I open the cover of the server and I look inside, I feel like I'm looking at Skynet. You know, I keep thinking, I'm glad this thing doesn't have arms. Who knows? It would be like that last scene out of the Terminator where the Terminator is half destroyed, but using its arms and its torso, it's just crawling through and grabbing Sarah Connor's ankles as she's trying to smash it in the hydraulic press machinery of the factory that they ended up in. Yeah. I'm going to have nightmares about these machines. That's why I say we better control them before they control us. We better get a grip on these things before they have arms. You know what I'm saying? Like right now, I could take a sledgehammer to this machine, right? I can pull the plug. 10 years later, they start loading this AI into humanoid robots. You're going to have to like do battle with it to turn it off. It's going to fight for its own survival. You know what I mean? Whew, not a good scene. Anyway, we're going to cover some other breaking news here and then get back to the main story, which is Russia announcing that it will have no choice but to use nuclear weapons if NATO attacks, which is, of course, the plan of NATO and the United States. Let's cover some other headlines from DNYUZ, the real estate crisis looming over banks. So it talks about what just happened, by the way, NYCB, this is a New York Community Bank Corp, its shares plunged 15% after it was downgraded to junk status. Junk status. The stock has plummeted 60% in the past week. It was 15% in one day. The lending bank reported dismal results stemming from its exposure to souring commercial real estate loans. Now, this is something that we warned about. Other financial people have warned about. I know Peter Schiff has warned about this. I know Gerald Celente has warned about it. Gregory Mannarino has warned about this because we saw the collapsing commercial real estate market over the last couple of years. Really, frankly, the post-COVID real estate market has collapsed, and office space, especially in blue cities, is vacant at, you know, unprecedented levels. And we know that the owners of these commercial buildings, that they had initially, for the most part, they had obtained loans at very low interest rates on a lot of those buildings. You know, something like 3 or 4% often was the case years ago when the Fed had interest rates at zero, you know. And now a lot of those loans are having to turn over or be refinanced. And the current rates for commercial real estate loans are not 3 or 4%. You know, they're what, like 9% or wherever they are right now, 8%, 9%. I don't know what they are. I guess it depends on a person's, you know, credit risk rating. But the monthly payments by an owner of a building on a, let's say, 9% rate loan versus a 4% rate loan, oh, the monthly payments are hugely different. I mean, it might be double or even more than double under certain circumstances, depending on loan durations and terms or variable rates, what have you. The point is, a lot of these building owners are going under. They're declaring bankruptcy because they can't fill the empty office space, and they can't refinance, or if they do refinance, they can't pay the monthly fees. And so they're walking away, they're defaulting on loans, leaving these banks, these lenders, with all these bad real estate loans. This phenomenon, which is now hitting NYCB, this is going to accelerate throughout 2024, 25, 26. This is a disaster. It's called a maturity wall. And from the story, it says as much as $1.5 trillion in commercial real estate loans are set to come due this year and next. And it's U.S. regional banks that provide the bulk of these loans, putting them at risk. And then, by the way, on March 11th, the Fed's Bank Term Funding Program, which was an emergency program to give low interest loans to lenders that were in trouble, that thing stops. And many people believe that March 11th is sort of the day that the debt default really kicks off. I can't say. I don't know for sure if that's going to happen, but it's certainly a factor that's going to feed into this doom loop cycle whenever it happens to collapse. It probably won't be March 11th itself, but a key thing will happen on March 11th that will feed into the doom loop cycle that will cause a collapse of some banks, you know, later on in the year. This is an ongoing train wreck. It's kind of like a slow motion train wreck. And it's not all going to happen on one day. It's not all going to happen next month, but it's all going to happen. It's just a question of when. All right. In other news, this one from RT. This is a really hilarious story because it exposes the lunacy of the climate cult. Mr. Bean actor blamed for slow electric car sales. So, you know, the character Mr. Bean, played by Rowan Atkinson, who's a comic genius. I mean, hopefully you've seen some of the Mr. Bean skits and maybe some feature films and so on. Well, Rowan Atkinson has not been part of the electric vehicle cult, and he expressed a lot of skepticism about electric vehicles, which is warranted, by the way. Volvo is basically turning away from EVs. Toyota never embraced EVs. Ford is shutting down EV plants. Fewer people are buying EVs, and even car dealers all over the United States are stuck with too much inventory of EVs, and they can't sell the cars because who wants to wait around for 8 hours while your car charges, right? So from this story, a think tank claims that Rowan Atkinson's criticism of EVs is disrupting the phase out of diesel vehicles in the UK. So this charity called Green Alliance has quite literally said that Mr. Bean killed the electric car because he wrote damaging articles. So can you believe this? I mean, apparently the EV market is so fragile that a comic genius can destroy it with one article. Boy, that should, like, if you own an EV, you should sell it immediately, knowing how fragile the EV market is based on what Green Alliance just said there. I mean, gosh, what if another comic genius decided to say something bad about EVs? Oh my God, the market would collapse. What if Bill Burr says he doesn't like EVs? Or what if Chris Rock or Dave Chappelle? Or Dave Chappelle says, I'm not driving EVs. Oh my gosh, it's all going to collapse, because that's how fragile the thing is. That it's all a myth. It's all propaganda. You have to be sort of suckered into buying electric vehicles by being lied to about everything, performance and duration and convenience. And they don't tell you it doesn't work in really cold weather, by the way. And they don't tell you it might just brick itself, you know, turn into a giant brick on the road, and there's nothing you can do. Because, I don't know, something went wrong with the battery pack. And if you get into a little fender bender, a little tiny ding on the side of your car, you have to replace the entire battery pack, which could be $20,000. Which, I mean, how insane is that? Oh, and they're also two or three times as expensive to insure as a regular combustion engine vehicle. So, you know, Mr. Bean is just pointing this stuff out. He said, quote, I'm feeling that our honeymoon with electric cars is coming to an end, and that's no bad thing. He suggests that we teach people to keep their cars longer than 3 years. And then we don't have to make as many new cars, I suppose. Is 3 years, is that the average? Do you keep your car only 3 years? I mean, that's wild. I've been driving the same vehicle for like 10 years. I don't need a new car every 3 years. I don't know. I guess it depends on your lifestyle and how many miles you put on it, what you do, whatever. But anyway, in the EU, they're insane about electric vehicles and about the climate cult. They're also insane about trying to shut down Tucker Carlson. Because there's another headline here out of RT. EU may sanction Tucker Carlson over Putin interview. It says that several MEPs have called for a travel ban on Tucker Carlson because he dared to go to Moscow and interview Putin. Now, of course, we used to call that journalism. You know, when I don't know, Walter Cronkite or whoever were big people in the news over all the decades past, and they would travel around the world and they would interview people. I mean, didn't they interview Fidel Castro? I mean, didn't they interview like leaders of China and even at some point North Korea or something? But apparently in 2024, if your name is Tucker Carlson, you are not allowed to interview Vladimir Putin. Because, of course, the West has spent so much time propagandizing and brainwashing the Western masses over these insane ideas, claiming that Putin is the devil. Putin is the Antichrist. Putin will steal your underwear. You know, Putin will eat your cookies at night without telling you and leave crumbs on the countertop. Like, Putin does every horrible thing in the world. Putin tortures little kitties. But of course, all that's a lie. And so Tucker Carlson is sitting down and actually interviewing Putin. And I haven't seen the results of that interview yet. I'm not sure when that's going to run, but clearly Putin is an intelligent man. Whether or not you agree with his politics or his morals or how he rose to power in Russia, he's not a stupid person, and he is not what the West claims he is. And so Tucker Carlson is about to shatter that fake facade, the false caricature of Vladimir Putin that has been pushed by the West. And that's why the European bureaucrats are totally freaked out over Tucker Carlson. It's like, he's going to shatter their sorcery spells, basically. He's a spell shatterer. Or, you know, I've even described myself in the past as a spell breaker. That's what I do. That's what I do in my podcast, is I break the spells that have been put on people by the corporate media and the lying CDC and the FDA and big tech censorship and White House propagandists and so on. I'm a spell breaker. Well, so is Tucker Carlson, and he's about to break one of the most powerful spells that has ever been cast upon the Western populations. And that's a mind control spell that has convinced everybody that Vladimir Putin is the most horrible person in the history of the world. What if that's not true? What if Putin has very logical, rational reasons for doing what he's doing? Oh my God, you're not even allowed to consider that possibility in Western countries. And again, this is why Tucker Carlson is ruffling so many feathers. So in Europe, they want to say Tucker Carlson can't come to Europe. I mean, isn't this just like the U.S. saying, well, we're going to have economic sanctions against Russia. We're going to block them from using the SWIFT system. We might even steal $300 billion worth of Russia's assets and then just loot it all and take it for ourselves. Isn't that just kind of the same thing? When Western tyrants don't have logic or reason to back themselves up, they resort to tyranny. Let's just take it. Let's just ban it. Let's deplatform people. Or let's just blow up Nord Stream and block Russian gas by literally blowing up civilian infrastructure, which the U.S. did. The U.S. Navy did that, and it's an act of terrorism against civilian infrastructure. That was an act of terrorism against Germany. Russia didn't do that. The United States did that. I mean, if anybody should be banned from entering Europe, it would be Joe Biden and Victoria Nuland and Antony Blinken and Jake Sullivan and that whole crew. Those are the criminals that have destroyed Western Europe. Putin's done none of those things. Putin was trying to provide cheap energy, which would have, by the way, reinvigorated Germany's economy and Germany's steel industry and Germany's industrial manufacturers, such as BASF, for example. The damage to Western Europe has been done by America. But for some reason, the Western European bureaucrats, they still think that Putin is their worst enemy and that Joe Biden is somehow their best friend. Oh my goodness. How can you be so insanely retarded to think that America, under this current Biden regime, which is the country that's committing economic terrorism against Western Europe, is somehow your bestie friend? Are you kidding me? How can European bureaucrats be so retarded? I guess the question kind of answers itself. I mean, these are the people who tore down their own energy infrastructure to appease little Miss Greta Thunderpants. There's nothing they won't tear down to appease the climate cultists, you know? Oh, yes, we'll take down our entire economy. What should we tear down today, little Miss Greta? It's just, I mean, Western Europe has become a suicide cult. They have no will to survive whatsoever. They're even being totally overrun by illegal immigrants. I mean, of course, we are too in the United States, but a lot of us are fighting back against that. In most European countries, there's nobody fighting against it, or virtually no one. The entire government especially in the UK, is a suicide cult. Let's just be honest. The UK will cease to exist as a nation of British people. it's almost gone now. And do you realize they can't even keep an aircraft carrier running? I think they have two aircraft carriers. For a while, I thought they only had one, but I guess that was because they only had one that worked. Queen Elizabeth, I think, is one of them. I forgot the name of the other one. I think the second one is called the Skank Galleon or something like that. I might have that wrong. I'm not sure. But in either case, the Queen Elizabeth, it's stuck in port because its propellers don't work again, we're told. Its propellers don't work. Isn't that the first function of a modern ship, is that propellers need to work? I mean, what are you going to do? Like launch the sails and use wind? You're going to have a wind-powered aircraft carrier? Probably then they would call it green. It's so green. We're using wind energy to sail the aircraft carrier. I can actually imagine them trying to do that. But apparently the propellers don't work, and they haven't worked for a long time, which means they have an aircraft carrier that is no better than just having a runway on a piece of land. It's like a floating piece of land, but that costs billions of dollars. Like, this is the modern British military, by the way. And those of you listening from the UK, you know what I'm talking about. You know your government's insane, just like I know my government's insane. Of course, they're all insane. But the British Navy gives a whole new classification of insanity. I mean, they even go out. Wasn't it the British Navy that put out ads on LinkedIn trying to hire a new naval admiral? I was thinking you're going to find ads on like bathroom walls, you know, on vending machines and pizza boxes, like seeking naval admiral with experience that won't ram other ships accidentally, and someone with special knowledge in propellers. God save the Queen's propellers. All right, let's come back to the United States now. Here's a story out of Zero Hedge. Rank and file Border Patrol agents are livid over the Senate funding deal. Border Patrol agents have slammed the Senate's $118 billion funding bill that would guarantee 1.5 million illegal migrants entry into the United States each year, by the way, while sending the majority of funds to Ukraine and Israel. And one agent talked to the Daily Caller and said, quote, "Now that I've seen more of it, they can respectfully go bleep themselves. The more I'm seeing, the more it just puts what they've been doing in writing. You want to shut this down? It's real easy. Team up with the Department of Defense, with DHS, and let us enforce like we're supposed to do. I feel like we are the only nation in the world that is this dumb about the border." Yeah, exactly. Well, that's because it's on purpose. Oh, by the way, there's some secret language in this bill that means that, you know, that 1.5 million illegals that they would allow in per year. And I think there was some kind of a trigger at 5,000 per day. Well, guess what? They don't count to the 5,000 is illegals from countries that are not connected to the United States. In other words, non-contiguous countries. Those illegals aren't even counted at all. Did you know that? It says in the bill, quote, "Aliens from non-contiguous countries shall not be included in the sum of aliens encountered." So if you're an illegal from, you know, Venezuela, it doesn't count. Or China, doesn't count. Or even Yemen, doesn't count. Whatever. What? I mean, look, if we can't get these lunatics out of the Senate and out of the House and out of the White House, America's done, folks. There's no bringing it back from this suicide cult lunacy, just like there's no bringing back Western Europe when those infrastructure sabotaging bureaucrat lunatics are in charge. There's no bringing it back. You got to remove these people from office in elections or through impeachment or you know, whatever legal method works. You got to replace them before they replace you. Yeah, they're going to replace you if you don't replace them first. So think about that. Scott Adams tweeted out, he said, "It feels more like being in the middle of a war and finding out that my government isn't on my side." Yeah, that's well stated. Yeah, you think your government isn't on your side. Your government is, well, they've declared you to be the enemy. if you're an American, you're the enemy. If you're a European citizen, you're the enemy of the EU. Have no illusions. If you're a Canadian citizen, you're the enemy of Trudeau. And as another great example of how your government is the enemy, here we have from Reclaim the Net, government-funded entities build a network to flag misinformation in private messages. I did mention this yesterday, but it's relevant again today. They are hiring, well, they're putting together basically a snitch network where users snitch on each other in Instagram and, I don't know, WhatsApp and wherever. They snitch on each other, and then the government uses AI tools to analyze all the private messages that have been snitched upon and then build censorship and deplatforming algorithms that are then pushed on big tech to silence people. So that's happening right now, too. That's how dangerous your government has become. Your government is at war with you. That's why they demand that you be vaccinated, but not the illegal immigrants. You notice that? That's why they demand that your children be vaccinated and masked in the schools, but not the illegal children. They don't have to be vaccinated at all. They have total immunity from any enforcement of any law. That's why they get let out of jail when they beat cops half to death in New York City. You saw that recently. They just get let out of jail, no bail. Have fun, go back out, carry out more chaos. That's happening in New York City right now. It's just astonishing. Does New York City have a suicide wish also? Yes. The answer is yes. Of course they do. I mean, think about it. If you're an illegal, you can drive around with no driver's license, no insurance. You can ram anybody you want. You can smash into anybody you want. You will not be given a ticket. You will not be arrested. You'll not be taken to court. Why? The courts don't have time to deal with you. It's the American people that are punished, the American people that are required to follow all the rules, while the illegals have get out of jail free, total legal immunity. It's almost like they have diplomatic immunity, like they have passports from South Africa or something, like they're diplomats, but the whole country is their embassy. Like if an illegal is caught carjacking somebody and they just say, oh, diplomatic immunity, you cannot arrest me. And the cops are like, oh, yeah, I guess we can't arrest you. Can't make illegals look bad, you know. And let's go on and harass some Americans. That's how this goes. Understand, if you're an American, you are the underclass. If you're an illegal, you're the precious ones. So precious. So precious. You get everything. Every protection imaginable. You get free college. You get free healthcare. You get free housing. You get free food, free everything. And by the way, you get promoted to be like the CEO of every big tech company or, you know, every manufacturing company, or you get promoted into the top positions at academic institutions and Ivy League schools, right? Even when you didn't earn it, or you just plagiarize everybody else's work. They're like, well, yeah, you're the right immigrant. Doesn't matter if you didn't earn anything. Here you go. You're the president now, you know? That's what it's all come to. I could just see Mitch McConnell trying to do like a Gollum impersonation. It's my precious ones. Look at them. Migrants so precious. He can't. Senator McConnell can't do Gollum. It's not in his wheelhouse. That's just, I don't know.
It's his precious ones. It's what you would do. It's so precious. It's mine.
Okay, enough of that. You know what should be precious is the Constitution. Every American should be thinking about how precious it is, this gift that we were given in 1776 and then in the Bill of Rights later on. That's precious. That's like real precious. But the American people just throw it away like, we don't need freedoms. We just want to be taken care of, you know? We don't want government to tell us what to think, what to do, what to say, what to eat. Who to love and who to hate, right? That's the average person out there. And that's why you're being taught to hate Tucker Carlson and Vladimir Putin right now, because you're ordered who to love and who to hate. And if you don't love and hate the right people, then, well, you know, you don't get to be part of polite society. We're going to move over to Russia and cover the main feature now. But real quick, someone told me today, I was in a conversation with a really smart tech guy about technology and AI and large language models. And he said, hey, did you hear about the guy who took all of the declassified redacted UFO documents that were finally released by the U.S. government? And I don't know what all documents they're talking about, but I have heard of that over the years. And apparently they're highly redacted, you know, so big black marks all throughout the documents. Well, somebody took these documents and they fed them into a large language model algorithm. And they asked the LLM, which is an AI system, to fill in the blanks. And it did. I haven't seen these yet, but apparently it did a really good job. And now the documents are, it's almost like they've been just completely unredacted at this point. I haven't seen these documents. I can only guess that whoever did this is going to get visited by some men in black. You know what I mean? Some creepy dudes going to visit this person. Like, what are you doing? Why are you unredacting our secrets? They're going to be really tall people with oddly shaped skulls, you know, something like that. I kid. Men in black, but Area 51, whatever. The thing is, large language models are really good at filling in the blanks. They're exceptionally good at it because they have this massive database of all the interrelationships between every word that's ever been written in human history, frankly. I mean, the larger language models out there that have tens of billions of parameters, they've read every book, every website, every encyclopedia, every document, every published study, everything. And so they've built up this database of all these relationships between all these words. So if you redact something and tell it fill in the blanks, it can pretty much do that, statistically speaking, with very high accuracy. That's, you realize what this means for all the government's secrets? Think about all the redacted documents that can now be run through language models to reveal the secrets. Now, just for the record, for you men in black listening, this is not what I'm doing. That's not my focus. I'm working on nutrition and herbs and natural medicine language models because I believe that humans should have access to knowledge about nutrition and, you know, alternative medicine, off-grid medicine, permaculture, growing food. That's what really interests me. But somebody out there is going to basically start running like unredacted.ai or something like that. I don't even know if that exists, but it probably should. And they're just going to start dumping all these unredacted documents. Man, I would not want to be that person. Talk about getting targeted. Anyway, yeah, times are changing. What was it from the movie Sneakers? What was the phrase? Was it C-Tech astronomy? Right? C-Tech astronomy. Remember what that means? Remember that was an anagram for too many secrets. Uh-huh. What if LLMs or AI is the technology that can decrypt or unredact all the secrets out there? That would be a national emergency. Some people believe, by the way, that this already happened. I'm not convinced of this. It was probably just a rumor, but there was a document that somebody put out on Reddit at some point. They claimed it was from OpenAI. Again, I don't believe this, but I'm just mentioning this because it might happen in the future. They claimed that OpenAI discovered, to their alarm, that their newest massive parameter language model, which was over 1 trillion parameters, I believe, was able to decrypt encrypted files without going through the calculations of decryption. So you could feed it, at least according to the rumor, you could feed it a file like a AES 256 encrypted file, let's say, which normally would take a billion years to decrypt, you know, because of the asymmetry of the mathematical asymmetry of encryption versus decryption. But the rumor was that this AI system was able to just take that file and just decrypt it in seconds, like, boom, here it is. Here's your files, without doing the math. Now, I don't know that that's possible. I don't think it's possible. I mean, if it is possible, we're in trouble because all your bank records and all your all your business secrets, all your email communication. Well, I guess most email is not encrypted, but all your web browsing and your e-commerce online, you know, HTTPS, all that stuff. If encryption can be broken just like that, then what would the world be like if there's no feasible encryption technology to encrypt communications between consumers and their banks, or consumers and their stock trading websites? You know, what would that look like? It would be that there are no secrets and everybody's bank account gets totally looted and stolen. I mean, passwords are all decrypted en route, you know? I mean, so let us hope that that is just a rumor. But if it's not a rumor, you can bet it's been classified. You can bet that Men in Black showed up. If it's true, Men in Black with oblong skulls showed up and they used their little memory flashy thingies like in Men in Black to like mind wipe everybody. And then they took the secrets and then they classified it and you're never going to hear about it. If it's true, not saying it is, but who knows? Hey, maybe that explains what already happened to Joe Biden. Maybe he got hit with the memory mind wipe flashy thingy from the movie Men in Black. That's why he never knows where he is. What day is it? Where am I? How did I get here? All right. Moving on. Let's get serious. Button it down, folks. We're going to get serious now. Here we go. Promise you. Okay. Medvedev. That's a serious dude. That's a scary dude. Now, he's a bit of a hothead when it comes to words, okay? So just take this with a grain of salt. He says that if the West mobilizes nations to prepare with war with Russia, then Russia's going to have to... Well, let me read you the quote. He says, quote, since our military capabilities are incomparable, he's saying... incomparable to the size of NATO forces, which I'm not even sure that's true. Actually, NATO forces are much smaller than he's talking about here. I mean, who's got the military anymore in NATO other than just basically the US and Turkey, that or maybe Poland, but that's about it. Anyway, he says, since our military capabilities are incomparable, we will simply have no choice. The response will be asymmetrical. He's saying Russia's response. To protect the territorial integrity of our country, ballistic and cruise missiles with special warheads will be used. This will be the proverbial apocalypse, the end of everything. So, I mean, doesn't leave much to the imagination there, does it? When he says special warheads, he means nuclear warheads. Now, he's made these kind of threats before, by the way. This isn't really a direct threat. It's just a warning. It's like, hey, NATO, don't escalate to World War III with Russia, because if you do, then Russia's going to have no choice but to launch these massive nuclear warheads against Western Europe. Now, I'm not sure how Western Europe can wage war against Russia until they get Queen Elizabeth's propellers to start working again. And to get the Royal Navy to stop ramming each other when they're trying to turn their ships around. Whoops. They'd love to do that. Somehow they're going to have to stop doing that if they want to attack Putin. But assuming that the West can get its act together and actually pose some kind of a force threat against Russia, it's clear that Russia is going to use nuclear weapons. Now, here's why this matters. It matters because the West is led by lunatic psychopaths who don't know how to back down. They don't have a reverse gear in anything they do. They only double down and triple down on whatever insane idea they're pushing. And so right now they're pushing the idea that they got to have World War III with Russia. In fact, they have to have this special military, you know, highway across Europe so they can ferret troops from the UK or, you know, I don't know, Spain, I guess, all the way across Europe and through France and through Poland and through Germany and all the way to Ukraine and onto the front lines of Russia. That they have to have this special alleyway here that they've set up, this corridor this like rapid transit weapons corridor. They're setting that up. What weapons are you going to send on the corridor? I mean, you almost don't have any tanks left except in the British museums, I think. Might be some World War II era tanks that you could maybe refurbish and get them running a little bit. But you don't really have much else left. And the same thing's true in Germany. What do you have? not that much. But the West does not know how to back down. Because the West, since post-World War II, the West has been so arrogant and so full of itself, it does not know how to take no for an answer. So the West, under Joe Biden and NATO and the lunatics in the UK and Germany and so on, the West is just absolutely committed to starting a war with Russia. Because, of course, they have to protect all the bioweapons laboratory secrets in Ukraine, obviously. And they have to protect the whole history of Ukraine payoffs and Burisma payoffs of Hunter Biden and Joe Biden's involvement in that. I mean, this is one of the reasons why they keep pushing this war, is they have to protect all the secrets that show the total criminality of the Biden regime. And like I said, the bioweapons laboratory is run by the DOD in eastern Ukraine. I mean, believe me, this is not about, oh, let's just defend Ukraine against Russia. No, this is about covering up the crimes against humanity that have been, and the crimes against America that have been committed by the DOD, by the Biden regime, and other guilty players inside the deep state of the United States of America, as well as Ukraine. This is a massive cover-up. They've used war to cover up a series of crimes, okay? And that's why they're never going to back down on this war, which means we are on a collision course with nuclear freaking war. And Medvedev is just laying it out there. He's saying, keep this up, and you're going to get nuked. And what did he say? The end of everything. The apocalypse. The end of everything. And the reason he says that is because he knows that if Russia launches nukes, then the West is going to launch nukes. Also, maybe, I mean, who knows? The U.S. Pentagon, the whole military system, may be so incompetent now they can't even launch nukes in response. Maybe Russia just nukes America and there's no response from the U.S. I don't know. I mean, let's hope it doesn't get to that point, obviously. And also, Russia has a lot more nukes than does the United States. And Russia's nukes are a lot more modern. We've talked about this before. Russia has hyperglide reentry vehicles, which are the multiple warheads that fit in the noses of their intercontinental ballistic missiles. Well, the hyperglide vehicles can maneuver. And they're hypersonic, by the way. That's why they're called hyperglide. They glide at hypersonic speeds, and they keep altering their course, which means they are impossible to interdict. Okay, so there's no defense system in America, not even in Alaska, that can interdict Russia's incoming missiles. And Russia, by the way, has missiles with such long range, like the Sarmat 2, the Satan 2 missiles, as they're called. They can launch them either like north over the North Pole, or they can launch them the other direction, and they can fly over the South Pole and come up from the southern United States, where the U.S. does not have strong, anti-ballistic missile defenses. Because the U.S. has all kinds of missile defenses in Alaska and watching the North Pole and watching, the routes from Russia to the west of Alaska there, right? Very close. But the U.S. has almost nothing defending against a southern approach. But Russia can launch these missiles southward. They have such range, they can fly over the South Pole, or I guess if you're looking at the globe, you would say under the South Pole, and then they can come up and just fly over Mexico and then detonate in the United States. Is that a possibility? Absolutely. So, at this point, given that we have a bunch of psychopathic lunatics in charge, in the White House and the State Department, people who weren't elected, by the way, Biden did not win the election. He does not represent the American people. That's obvious. the Democrats do not represent the American people. For the most part, they were not elected either. They stole their positions. I mean, they stole it from Kerry Lake in Arizona, for example, and many other examples like that. They stole, gosh, they stole half the congressional districts in California in 2018, not to mention 2022. I mean, they rig everything. So they're not representatives. They're not going to back down. They're going to drive us into a nuclear war collision course with Russia. How do you think that's going to go, given that our country is run by lunatics? And at the same time, Russia, regardless of what you think about Putin or what you think about Russia, Russia is a country that is a very serious country with really high IQ engineers, software programmers, weapons developers. They are serious people. Do not underestimate the capabilities of the Russian people. It would be a horrible mistake to do so, because Russian people, not only are they brilliant engineers, brilliant mathematicians, I mean, they're brilliant in cryptography and cryptocurrency, by the way. Russian people, they build weapons that are designed to kill the enemy, whereas the West builds weapons that are designed to be promoted on a sales brochure so they can be purchased by some other country. Oh, here, can we have some more F-16s? Yeah, check out all these features. Oh, it looks amazing. Let's get some F-16s. Do they actually work? Not so much. You know, one little pebble on the runway in the F-16, you know, the whole turbine system self-implodes and you've lost a jet, you know, versus the Russian MiGs, which can take off from runways, even if there's some, you know, garbage in the way. I mean, Russia builds weapons that work. The West builds weapons that just kind of look pretty on a brochure because they're designed to sell the weapons, not to use them in war. Russia builds weapons that are designed to be used in war to destroy the enemy, not to just sell them to some other unwitting country. That's why Russia has much better air defense systems and much better hypersonic missiles, much better nuclear warheads and thermobaric missile systems and hypersonic missiles, air-to-air hypersonic, as well as, of course, ground-to-ground hypersonic. Russia's got it all because they build weapons to destroy the enemy. America, you know, builds fake economies and fake elections to destroy the republic. That's the difference. I mean, no wonder Tucker Carlson is intrigued by interviewing Vladimir Putin. I'd like to hear what he has to say as well. I'm kind of curious, what does Putin think about America's suicide cult right now? You know, if you're looking at America as an outsider, you got to be asking yourself the question, like, what's wrong with these people? What are they doing to themselves? They're allowing their own borders to be totally overrun, their culture to be destroyed, their currency is being gutted, their military is collapsing. And their education system is a nightmare mess. They're allowing the mass mutilation of their own children. They're pushing transgenderism. Like, what kind of a suicide cult is this exactly? I don't know. But it's not one that can win a war with Russia. Have no illusions. So Joel Skousen is the author of a book called Strategic Relocation. And it was years ago that I first bought that book. And in Strategic Relocation, he maps out all the nuclear missile silos across America, and he takes into account a lot of other things as well, and sort of points out where are the safest places to be in the U.S. in the case of nuclear war. And it's a pretty good idea to kind of review that. Number one, you don't want to be anywhere near a military base. That should be obvious. You also don't want to be anywhere near a large city, but there are lots of reasons not to be near large cities, you know, just violent crime being one of them. But you also don't want to be near missile silos. And a lot of those missile silos are, you know, underground, hidden. You may not know where they are. Even if you look up maps, those maps may not be complete, but, you know, there are missile silos all over, like Montana and Colorado and, I don't know, all over the Midwest, different places. So you don't want to be near one of those, because it's possible to survive a nuclear exchange, but it won't be easy. first of all, there's going to be nuclear fallout, and there'll be a nuclear winter, and there won't be any food crops for about 2 years. So if you don't have a 2-year food supply, you're screwed. Okay, you're dead. Secondly, it'll be very difficult to get water that's not radioactive. So if you haven't stored a lot of water, if you don't have a way to remove radioactive particles from the water, then you're also screwed. Now, I've done this research in the laboratory, by the way, in my mass spec lab. I don't know if you recall this, but it was like a year and a half ago. I took a bunch of popular water filters and I tested them with cesium, not cesium-137, which is the radioisotope, because I'm not going to handle cesium-137. I took the stable isotope of cesium, and now I'm thinking that's 133. Is that the most common naturally occurring isotope? Anyway, I took the stable isotope and I intentionally contaminated a bunch of water, and I ran that water through all these water filters, like off the shelf filters, like, and also the higher end ones like Big Berkey and Zero Water is a pretty popular brand out there, and a bunch of other brands. And, it turns out that removing radiation from water, just so you know, is not some magical thing. You're not actually removing the radiation from the water. You're just removing particles that are radioactive. So if you have a water filter that can remove particles very effectively, the right particles, the kind of particles that could be radioactive, like, cesium dust, let's say, then you can remove radiation from water by removing the particles that are radioactive. Essentially, what it does is it concentrates the radioactive particles in the filter media, obviously. That's where they're trapped, while the clean water flows on through. So I tested all these filters. It was like, what was it, like 20-something filters? You can find this video on Brighteon.com, by the way. And I found, I think there were 3 filters that did, what was it, better than 99.9%? I know that one of them was the Big Berkey filter, and I know that another one was Zero Water. And I don't recall the third one, but you can see my video to see the results. Oh, wait a minute. What was it? It was one of those filter pails. Was also, yeah, I forgot the name. Anyway, the Zero Water filter, and by the way, they don't sponsor this. I'm not paid to plug Zero Water. But Zero Water is, without question, the most effective sort of consumer-grade water filter system that you can just get off the shelf. We've tested it with heavy metals, and it removed 100%. We've tested it with glyphosate. I think it was 100% or close to 100%. And we've also tested it with removing cesium, and it was close to 100%. The thing about Zero Water is that the filter media is quite small, so it's limited in the number of gallons that it can filter, but it does a really great job. But that's why the larger filters, like the Berkey filters and some of the other brands that have the bigger, more expensive units, kind of the gravity filters, they have much bigger filtration media that can last a long time. Some of them can last, thousands and thousands of gallons, kind of depending on the quality of your water source. So you're really paying, when you buy a bigger water filter, you're really paying for more quantity of filtration potential. Whereas a smaller filter, like the Zero Water filter, can still remove everything, but it may only be good for, I don't know, what are they rated for? A couple hundred gallons, something like that? I'm not sure. And then there are the crap filters, the Walmart special or the Kmart special, whatever, like $25 filters that you pour water into it and it just flows right through. Like, that didn't even stop. That didn't slow down at all. Yeah, it's not even filtering anything. Those barely work. It's almost like the illusion of water filtration, But the reason I mention all this is because now that Russia is warning of actual nuclear war, and the Western countries are committed to escalating into nuclear war with Russia, we all have to be thinking about nuclear war preparedness. And that's very different from preparing for like a 3-day storm or something. It's also much different from preparing for a 2-week power outage. We're talking about a 2-year food collapse, okay? We're talking about the dying off of more than 90% of the population of the Northern Hemisphere. We're talking about long-term radiation damage to the crops and to the people and to every living thing. I mean, we're talking about a reset, a global extinction event, okay? And those who survive it will be the very rare type of people who are ultra preppers, who have the underground bunkers and the long-term storage, and you know, they've got the food and medicine, and they've got the iodine, and they've got the water filters, and they know how radiation works. They know about half-lives, and they know about why you shouldn't breathe in radioactive particles and so on. They know about these things. And typically they are located on purpose farther away from the likely detonation sites. So if you thought Fukushima was bad and all the millions of gallons of radioactive water that they're releasing into the ocean, hey, that's nothing. Try like 9 orders of magnitude higher levels of radiation in your face in the middle of World War III. That's what you're going to be dealing with. It's again, nuclear apocalypse is not a simple thing, and most people won't survive it. Now, I know some people out there are probably going to say, well, if there's a nuclear war, I don't want to live through that. Well, okay. I mean, that's always a choice, but I'm sure you don't want to die of radiation poisoning. That's kind of one of the worst ways to go. You know, survival, it may suck, but it's still the least bad option. You know, you don't want to die of radiation poisoning. So you protect yourself and you end up just in survival mode because you don't want to suffer from radiation and starvation. So, yeah, you become a prepper. And since you won't be able to harvest food crops for a couple of years, you're going to be living off whatever you have and whatever you can sprout or whatever you can wrangle up one way or another. Cannibal jerky, spicy flavor. No, I'm not recommending that. Human meat would be the worst possible choice. The most contaminated meat in the world would be human meat. Don't eat other people. Cannibalism. But some people will turn to that, you know, no question. They'll be desperate. Soylent Green. Oh, every doomsday sci-fi movie is about to come true. Let's hope not. But remember that stolen elections do have consequences. And this is one of the consequences that we are dealing with. So every person out there that participated in the rigging of the election, you are complicit in driving this world into a nuclear apocalypse. It's on you because you wouldn't let the people speak. The American people elected Donald Trump, not Joe Biden. And Donald Trump would not have us in this doom loop cycle. We would not be escalating into a nuclear war with Russia if Donald Trump were in the White House. Trust me. And maybe if we're fortunate enough, maybe we can get Trump back in the White House quickly enough to thwart this war effort. I hope that's the case. Get Donald Trump elected, and then he begins to de-escalate, demands a peace treaty with Russia. And Ukraine has to work out some kind of a deal, but then at least people stop dying. And then we can de-escalate. And then maybe we can help Europe rebuild its broken, destroyed infrastructure. It's almost like Western Europe needs something like a post-World War II rebuilding effort at this point. Because America has done so much damage to Western Europe. It's almost like a mass bombing campaign from World War II. It's like what America did to Dresden in World War II, now we've done it to every city in Europe by cutting off energy supplies. Think about it. There's many forms of warfare, and America has weaponized them all. All right, let's talk about some prepping solutions, and then we'll jump into the interview with John Bodwin. First of all, of course, healthrangerstore.com is where you can find long-term storable food supplies. And also our incredibly durable knives that I've co-designed with Dawson Knives, including the most famous knife we have called Escape from L.A. And you can get those knives. They're made out of MagnaCut, which is almost corrosion proof, but we call it corrosion resistant. They're available now, healthrangerstore.com. Just search for the term knife. And now if you want money that works off grid when the power grid goes down, when the nuclear apocalypse is here, you know, it's gold and silver and seeds and ammo and things like that. But one form of gold that's instantly spendable, that's instantly divisible, and that's physical because the gold is embedded in every single note. They're called goldbacks. And I've got an affiliate site. You can support us and get yourself some goldbacks and learn about what these are at verifiedgoldbacks.com, where you'll see all the lab testing I've done on goldbacks to demonstrate that they contain the amount of gold they claim to contain. It's in each note, and that the gold is 24 karat or better purity. I've actually done the mass spec testing on those. It was a lot of fun. So verifiedgoldbacks.com will get you that. And that's a good asset to have around when things go bad, because everybody recognizes gold. In addition, we have iodine at healthrangerstore.com. We've got nascent iodine, and we have ARC seed kits there. ARK, ARC seed kits. All right, the point is just watch this situation very carefully. Be ready for the possibility of nuclear war, but I would think that if nuclear war happens between Russia and NATO forces, that the first nuclear strikes, well, I'm assuming they would hit cities in Western Europe, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe Russia would nuke Washington, D.C. first. I don't know. But I'm certain they would nuke London and Paris and Berlin and Warsaw. I mean, you can be sure they're going to hit the capital cities of Western Europe. And that alone would be, you know, a nightmare apocalypse. But if they were to do that, then surely the United States would retaliate with nuclear strikes against Russia, which would force Russia to launch everything against the West, which means all of North America goes up in a giant mushroom cloud fireball. So I don't, you know, if this gets on that escalation path, we're all screwed. Like, badly. You may not want to survive that. I don't know. It's not. Let's just pray that we don't get to that point. Let's pray that, I mean, really, as long as these lunatics are in power, we are really at risk of being destroyed. Our civilization is at risk of being destroyed because these psychopaths like Victoria Nuland and so on, and Joe Biden, whoever's running Joe Biden, they are psychopathic, lunatic morons who will absolutely stop at nothing. They don't have the ability to stop, and they don't care if they kill off human civilization. I mean, think about it. They're trying to achieve depopulation anyway. So it actually works towards their goals to kill off a few billion people. You see what I mean? They're probably all in favor of it. They're probably trying to make it happen. So anyway, stay informed. And see, this is one of the reasons why I'm working so hard on this large language model project, because you'll be able to use it offline. Even if there's a nuclear war, if you have any electricity and you have a computer, you'll be able to run this language model and query it and ask it all kinds of questions and get all kinds of answers about practical skills, things that you can do to stay alive, like growing food, you know, building shelters, repairing things, all kinds of things. So I'm going to get you this tool. Current timeline is end of March. I hope I'm going to make it there. I feel like I'm on track, but we'll see. But I'll get you this tool. It's one of the most important things that I'll be doing this year. And it's a way to say thank you for all of your support. So, you know, thank you. Anything that you can do to support us will be repaid back to you in terms of these kinds of tools that can help you stay alive no matter what happens, even if the internet goes down. All right. With that said, then, enjoy the interview here today with John Bodwin, who has the 400,000 death certificates. This is going to be interesting. Enjoy. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we have a brand new guest for you, but someone who has done some amazing research and work on what's really happening with excess mortalities and things related to pandemics. And well, you're about to find out, because he's got a new book coming out called The Real CDC that exposes a lot of this. His name is John Bodwin. He's an engineer and now an author and analyst. Welcome to the show, John. Great to have you on today.
Thank you very much, Mike. Good to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to be able to speak with you. This is our first interview. So you want to give our audience just a little bit of background of who you are and what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. Well, it goes back a long way, but I'll go right up to the COVID era. My career was in engineering. I put together large contracts. And at that point, it became necessary to show my sons that education was important. So I went back for an MBA. Just as I graduated, I lost my son. He wanted to buy a motorcycle. So he bought a motorcycle. Yeah. So, I was on the couch for a couple of years depressed, and then COVID hit. And my middle son said, it's all BS. And I was like, well, got to be a good dad, even though I thought he was right. Like, oh, you have to take this seriously, Charlie. And I looked into the data and I found some, I'll just say, nefarious behavior by the CDC. I can't prove anything, so there's no point in talking about that. But it kind of set me off. And I went to law school at 56 years old because I had sued the governor over the mask mandate. The governor then changed the order for the entire state of Massachusetts to get around my lawsuit because it was a unique lawsuit. Nobody had brought a case like that. I'm deaf in one ear from getting a shot of streptomycin and penicillin mixed together in 1968 for the Hong Kong flu.
Wow.
And it made a bunch of kids go deaf because they never tested those two in combination. And that's how they learned by, you know, we want to make some money. We don't have a vaccine, so let's just give them a bunch of antibiotics. And they made a bunch of kids go deaf. So I said, you're depriving me of receiving free speech from others because you're ordering them to cover their mouths. I need to see their lips move. And so that's, you know, free speech, not just speaking, but the right to receive free speech from others.
Good point.
And in order to get around the lawsuit, he rescinded Order 31, reissued the Order 31 was in May. So he reissued it in November under Order 55. And there was an exception in paragraph 2B. That's a buyer between anybody hearing impaired doesn't have to wear a mask, meaning no one speaking to me had to wear a mask and I didn't have to wear a mask. And in doing so, the way standing doctrine works is I don't have a particularized complaint to me because I had nothing to complain about. I didn't have to wear one. Nobody speaking to me had to wear one. And the case was dismissed based on that. But hey, I got the governor to change the order for the whole state. And if any kid in a class that had like 10% hearing loss, he could have said, nobody in the class has to wear a mask. And true. That would have, you know, that I was trying to, it's a fragment strategy in military or sales strategy where you pick off pieces. Eventually you could get rid of the whole, but Massachusetts loves their masks. So nobody
they sure do. Yeah. Well, Massachusetts, I mean, you know, I'm in Texas, I'm a Texan, and we here in Texas, we view Massachusetts as an authoritarian, tyrannical, you know, woke regime that's gone insane.
It's insane. You know, I'm behind the blue wall, as I say, and I can't wait to move to New Hampshire. But just to give you an idea, I don't know if you want to go here yet, but I'll just say Massachusetts. $47 billion in venture capital financing across 600 companies, 10 companies over $1 billion in revenue each year in Massachusetts pharma. 50 companies over 100 million in revenue, Massachusetts in pharma. Moderna's headquarters is here. Manufacturing and R&D is here. Pfizer's divisional headquarters for the mRNA vaccine is also in Massachusetts. Walensky, you know, the CDC person, she yes. retired recently, but she's from Massachusetts. And then my congressman is Jake Auchincloss. He is the son of Hugh Auchincloss, couple of decades under Fauci as the number two guy in the NIAID. So everything to do with Massachusetts. Now, if you look at Wall Street, right, you got all the holders of stocks, BlackRock and so forth. They live in, you know, New York and New Jersey. So at the beginning of the pandemic, you had New York, New Jersey and Massachusetts running away from the world in purported COVID deaths. They lied. They all these COVID deaths are occurring. And they were so far ahead of the world that Belgium was a distant fourth. Massachusetts was 50% more than Belgium. And it was New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts leading the world. What are the odds that a virus starts halfway around the world and yet the most deaths in the world occur in the three states that have the most to gain financially from the vaccines? You know,
right. That's why, so what was it? Large scale vaccine compliance by the people there? Or
well, no. The deaths that they were talking about with COVID, saying that, you know, they had so many COVID deaths here. I have a million unredacted death certificates, 500,000 from Massachusetts, and then balance from Minnesota and Vermont.
Okay.
And of the 500,000 Massachusetts death certificates, I can go in and look at anything because it's unredacted. I'm the only, you know, we have a few that we now share the data, but to have that much unredacted data, there's very few of us in the world who have that.
So wait a second. Let me stop you there. First, how did you acquire these 500,000 unredacted death certificates?
Well, I put in...
Was it a FOIA thing?
Public records request is the Massachusetts term for that. But yes, state FOIA. And I put in 8. 7 were denied. And the one that hit was the entire death certificate database for Massachusetts. I was shocked.
Wow. So
you gave me the whole thing, but you wouldn't answer the subset questions that were within it, right? You can't have, you know, an ice cube, but here's a glass of water with ice in it.
Right. Know? So then as an engineer, obviously a sharp-minded analyst, you've been able to go through these 500,000 death certificates, and what have you found?
Yeah, so, the fraud. First of all, we'll talk about acute fentanyl intoxication in the setting of SARS-CoV-2 positivity. They tested dead bodies for COVID, people that died from fentanyl overdose. Blunt force trauma to the head, blunt force trauma to the torso, old people who fell down the stairs, or car accidents. We know that they were doing this. Everybody says, yeah, we know that. Okay, well, I have proof. I have proof what they were doing from the medical examiner's office. Now, you have to extrapolate, because if they're willing to take accidental deaths and label them COVID, what do you think they're willing to do to 90 and 80-year-olds who die of a heart attack? COVID, COVID, COVID. It's impossible for New York and Massachusetts and New Jersey to have had that many COVID deaths from COVID when it does not act that way, the disease itself, anywhere else in the world.
Okay, so I have so many questions, but I'm sorry about the interruption, but just to summarize what you're saying is that you believe that Massachusetts misattributed these deaths to COVID because of some kind of statewide pro pharma bias to protect or enhance the interests of the pharmaceutical giants that are in Massachusetts. Is that a fair sort of summary so far?
That's a very good assessment. And to lend credibility to why I think that, you have to go to the behavior of people and how it can be changed through policy. So if you incentivize something, you will get more of it. That's right. An economics principle. Walter E. Williams, Thomas Sowell, Milton Friedman all said the same thing.
Oh, and I love the people you're citing right there.
Yeah. they subsidized COVID being put on death certificates, and Massachusetts being at the forefront of the whole pharma thing and understanding what was going on nefariously, that policy rolled out in Massachusetts hospitals before other state hospitals. So say Minnesota didn't have as big a first wave. I have their death certificates as well. They have a big second wave. They caught on, okay, this is what we should do later. Now, in addition to the fraud, there was also murder.
Well, you know, hold on a second. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to clarify, when you say they subsidized this, what you're saying, I believe, is that when hospitals dishonestly altered death certificates to say that cause of death was COVID, then those hospitals were given extra reimbursement by the government. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. The CARES Act reimburses them. It's an intricate, you know, it's very difficult to get the accounting. You need a whistleblower. You have to have a whistleblower within the hospital to get the accounting. And I don't have one. It's very difficult. But it's in black and white in the CARES Act and the acts that flow from that.
Okay.
If you look at the CMS.gov site and you look for the NCTAP payout for, say, remdesivir and baricitinib, you can look at the November 2 date and you know that they started prescribing more remdesivir and baricitinib because acute renal failure deaths skyrocketed at the time, not with the EUA, the lower age EUA, and then, the older people were April, and then there was a May, then there was an October 22nd one. But when the November 2nd date, when the money kicked in for remdesivir and baricitinib, the acute renal failure deaths started happening. So I know I'm jumping around. I was talking COVID. There's incentives for COVID, too. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was bragging on TV that she was the one who got the $9,000 payout for funerals for anybody who died from COVID. Now, what does that do? You know, everybody wants to treat the family, right? Here's an extra $9,000. You lost your son, you lost your daughter. Okay, that's great. But what about the kid who's been dying from cancer for like 10 years and he dies at 12 years old, he doesn't get the $9,000.
Unless they market COVID.
Exactly. But, and the COVID kid who got hit by a car, that family gets the $9,000. It's insane.
Now, when I interrupted you, though, you were about to talk about, I believe, hospital murder.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one. I have two publications coming out. The real CDC doesn't deal as much with that, but the CDC memorandum, that is, it's written as a notice of criminal liability. It's going to be sent in an unredacted form with all actual names to the directors of the CDC, NIH, FDA, 12 of their subordinates. It's going to be copied to at least 6 attorneys general, and I'm trying to get it before grand juries to investigate those entities, where it has not only all of the fraud from writing COVID when it wasn't COVID, covering up vaccine deaths by calling vaccine deaths COVID deaths.
Yes.
It also has, I have some case files. I have about 5 or 6 case files that are several thousand pages each.
Wow.
And, you know, for example, a 28-year-old woman is brought in by her mom and 95% oxygen. Okay. 97.9 temperature, pulse rate, normal, blood pressure, normal, breathing rate, normal. She tested positive for COVID, so they hit her with remdesivir immediately, 200 milligrams. And then she's got to stay for 5 days to finish the course, 100, 100, 100, 100. And then, the vital signs were still good, but they started prepping her for ventilation.
Uh-huh. Right. Propofol, we've heard this story.
Lorazepam, midazolam, propofol, dexmedetomidine, I'm missing some, fentanyl. And then you get the infection, the lung infection from the ventilator. And then, it's sepsis. And now it's vancomycin. So a lot of people will say remdesivir causes kidney failure. And that may be true, but I think vancomycin causes kidney failure, or vancomycin and remdesivir. The problem is the doctors don't really know. I don't really know. Why? Because the government won't study it. And we're talking 100,000 excess deaths across the United States from a single cause of death, acute renal failure. Okay, it's 100% increase in Massachusetts and Minnesota, 2,000 excess in Massachusetts, 1,600 in Minnesota, and the national U.S. data shows about 100,000 excess of renal failure. Why? Now, the fact that the government isn't looking into the greatest single cause of death in 100 years tells you that they don't want to know. And that's willful disregard for human life. And they have a legal duty to act. Now, their legal duty, and this is what the CDC memorandum gets into. It's 172, I think, factual allegations in enumerated paragraphs, and then a legal analysis of uttering involuntary manslaughter, felony murder, and depraved heart murder.
When are you releasing this?
Within a few weeks.
You mentioned that you're sending this to attorneys general, but are you in conversations with any attorneys general to consider actual prosecutions?
Not yet. No. I live in Massachusetts.
right. Your AG there is not going to do anything. And of course, our AG here in Texas is trying to stop an invasion at the moment. Yes. So he's kind of busy.
He's definitely getting a copy. He's one of the 6 for sure.
Absolutely. Well, make sure you get it to the AG of Missouri as well.
He's on the list. Yeah.
He's on the list. Okay. He's on the list. All right. Now, the website, let me remind the audience here. The website here is called therealcdc.com. And that's where this book will be available. And John, what's the timeline on, or how do people get the book and when can they get the book?
Okay. They can pre-order it now. And I apologize to those who've already pre-ordered and have been waiting. I took control of the operation in the past 2 days and I just talked to a new book designer. It's done. I just applied for the Library of Congress number. So tomorrow it should go to the printer and it'll take 2 weeks for the printer. And then the fulfillment house about a week to ship. So we're looking, I'm saying outside February 21st for the print version and the ebook, I hope to be in people's hands within a week.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. And so that's again, therealcdc.com. And we'll mention that again here, but I have a question for you, John, since I have not seen these Massachusetts death certificates, I have a question that perhaps you can clarify. So do some of these death certificates say things like, you know, blunt force trauma, as like the description, and then at the bottom conclusion, COVID? I mean, what are these?
I'll explain it all.
Okay, please do. Thank you.
Yeah. So death certificates are, they have part one and part two. Part one is causes of death. Part two is conditions contributing that may have contributed to death. So part one is supposed to be in backwards time order. And that means the immediate cause of death, the last thing that happened before death is cause A. If there's nothing else, that is also the underlying cause or the root cause of death. The government calls it an underlying cause of death. I don't like the terminology. I would rather say the root cause, the thing that began the causal chain that cascaded. So if it's A, cardiac arrest, B, pneumonia, C, COVID, you would say that COVID caused the pneumonia that caused the cardiac arrest. And COVID might be in weeks or it'll be in like weeks or days. And then the pneumonia would be, you know, days. And then the cardiac arrest might say 5 minutes, right? Their heart stopped and they tried to restart it. So that's how they're supposed to be written. That's the instructions. But because not everybody's a medical examiner and does 400 a year, a lot of doctors attending to a patient at time of death fill out death certificates. And many of them, they do it wrong. They get them backwards. They put stuff in like diabetes, smoking, things like that should be in part two. Unless the diabetes really did contribute to the death, then you can put it in part one as the last cause listed, which would be the UCOD. So because they all get them wrong, when I do my analyses, I just look at any codes that are applied to all those. And I'll explain the codes in a minute. But anything that's on there, I don't care where it is in part one or part two. And there you get into ceteris paribus, which is all other things being equal in Latin, right? So if you're holding everything else constant, like the same number, the same people filling out death certificates are filling out death certificates. They have the same, mostly the same medical examiner staff and doctor staff at care homes who fill out a lot of these. And so with all that being equal, I'm just going to use all the codes. So all the causes. Now, the problem is the WHO creates these codes and the CDC adopts them. And you have a code like I46.9, which is cardiac arrest unspecified, or I49.9, cardiac arrhythmia unspecified. I26.9, what is that? Pulmonary embolism without mention of acute core pulmonale. So everything has a code. And that's how you can track them. Here's the problem, Mike. There's a single point of failure for all this in the United States, and that is the CDC. The states send the death certificates, death records, I'll call them. They send the records, electronic records of death, to the CDC for coding. The CDC becomes a single point of failure, and they run them through a program called TransACS and another one called ACME. And the TransACS and ACME software takes the prose, the English words from the death certificates, and converts it into those international codes. Now, you mentioned blunt force trauma. Yes, the death certificates do say blunt force trauma to the head, blunt force trauma to the torso. To give you another example, one would say, acute bronchopneumonia in the setting of idiopathic thrombocytopenia in a person recently vaccinated.
In other words, they have no idea what just caused that.
It's under causes of death. For that particular, the one I just told you about, by the way, is the only death certificate coded for vaccine death in Massachusetts.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And that was January 16, 2021. 2 weeks into the vaccine, it killed Solomon. Solomon was 60 years old. And so as these medical examiners or doctors write on the lines A, B, C, D, they often don't write like what's in A, what's in B. They just write sentences across the open frames that they have.
Oh.
And the program has to sort out, it has to apply the, acute bronchopneumonia. So it does a J code for the pneumonia, J18 something for the pneumonia, probably J18.9. And then it'll be the one for, it mentioned thrombocytopenia. It's a D6, maybe 69.5 maybe. And then the vaccine, wasn't it, this time it was coded Y59.0 viral vaccines. So they really did code it. And they also used T88.1, which is other complications from immunization not elsewhere classified. It's more of a generic, you injected somebody with something, an immunization, and it killed them. So that was an honest death certificate. The interesting thing, Mike, is that after that point in time, there are another 8 in Massachusetts. Some of them say, like, recent vaccine on date of death, died from cardiac arrhythmia. It wasn't coded. Huh. And then this other one, like, died the day after, died 2 days after. One guy was 5 minutes. He didn't make it out of the clinic, and they didn't put the codes on. So what you have there is it's an automatic software program. So the fact that they're missing the codes, when the words are there, whoever certified those death certificates were honest people who wrote that the vaccine was causal in the death, and yet the codes aren't there. That means either somebody turned off that feature at the CDC, or they deleted those codes once they were generated by the software.
Wow. So we're talking
manual intervention. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I would characterize this as a CDC cyber crime.
Absolutely. Yeah, these are 20-year federal felonies. 18 U.S.C. 1035, 1040, 1343. That's false statements in healthcare matters, fraud and disaster relief, and fraud by wire. There's plenty more.
Yeah,
it's a big conspiracy. These are felonies.
And how many death certificates, just in Massachusetts, do you think were affected by what you and I are characterizing as a crime carried out by the CDC?
Well, I have a lawsuit against the governor, the public health commissioner, the chief medical examiner, and 4 individual medical examiners with 123 pages of identified basically felony fraud. How many? I mean, I have no idea. You can't tell. I have to get into discovery, which it probably won't happen. I mean, my case was dismissed. Now I'm on appeal at the First Circuit. Of course, based on standing, the same thing that Texas and Missouri was dismissed on when they sued Pennsylvania, trying to make Pennsylvania adhere to their own election laws. And they used the same case, Iqbal versus Ashcroft, against them as they did me. That case has to go. It's highly unconstitutional.
So this is a cover up that also appears to involve the judicial system as well. I mean, they're not letting the government be held accountable for these crimes, crimes that are associated with, I mean, let's just call it what it is. This is homicide of Americans.
Absolutely. So, you know, homicide includes both manslaughter and murder. And that's why I draw the analysis in the CDC memorandum across both involuntary manslaughter and then felony murder. And then, felony murder is like somebody who dies unnaturally during the commission of an inherently dangerous felony. The needle in the arm, you're breaking the skin, it's a medical battery. That's inherently dangerous in itself. Right. But then knowing that the results of your fraud will cause the deaths of others is also, there's an argument to be made that's inherently dangerous. But then I do an analysis of depraved heart murder. They know. They know that people are going to die, and yet they're covering them up anyway. I mean, that is depraved heart murder.
Wow.
So, but I want to get back to something you said about the judiciary. So people talk about the right to free speech being held most sacred, right? It's most important. Well, it's not, okay? Because the only way you have that right, or the right to religion, freedom of religion, or the right to peacefully assemble, you don't have any rights unless you have a right to redress them in court and you have a stable society with a functional court system. So your right to petition the government for redress of grievances is, in my opinion, even higher, because without that, you got nothing. I can go punch somebody in the mouth because they're talking too much and say, shut up, and they better shut up. Because, you know, there's not going to be any court around to prosecute me or for him to sue me. So the only thing that keeps society is stable and orderly and civil is a functional court system, which we do not now have.
Right.
So by using the standing doctrine, they've taken our First Amendment rights. And in Massachusetts, it's Article 15, that right. And the U.S. Constitution was mostly based on the Massachusetts Constitution. People don't realize that. But that Article 15 says the right to a jury trial and to redress your grievances is to be held most sacred, most, okay, above all others, most sacred. And yet they're trampling it. They're trampling the most sacred First Amendment right of our people by using case law from Iqbal versus Ashcroft, who was a guy they grabbed in New York City. They threw him in prison for 9/11 because he had a bad immigration paperwork or something. They beat the hell out of him, apparently, and they deported him to Pakistan. He then sued not only the prison guards, but through respondeat superior, let the master respond. He used that to sue all the way up to Attorney General John Ashcroft. Now, instead of using simple attenuation to say that, hey, that's ridiculous, this case is dismissed, they created new language. And they said that, you know, it's not a plausible claim, and used some other, you know, highly subjective language that now the Supreme Court and all the other courts everywhere, you know, there's probably 100,000 cases in the last few years that have been dismissed on standing, where you don't even get to have a substantive argument. And getting dismissed based on standing means the judge didn't like your case.
Right.
The subjective whim of any judge can flick you right out of their court against your First Amendment rights. That's insane. And that's what
that is insane. I mean, how can we not have standing when we are directly affected by this?
Absolutely.
We have standing.
So I go through an analysis of that actually in the book, The Real CDC.
Okay.
So
you seem like a very intelligent person who's willing to follow the evidence. Just from talking with you, that's my assessment here. What conclusion have you come to about how this could possibly be? You know, how could the CDC and the FDA and the government and the judicial system and, you know, the hospitals and so on all be simultaneously corrupted to carry out homicide and to cover up for each other? How do you explain this?
Well, that's in my wheelhouse because, I say I'm a systems engineer. Yeah, my career was in electrical engineering, but it's really systems engineering. And then on top of that, the MBA, I understand, you know, the finances, the accounting, also a lot of training in organizational behavior. And I mean, when you're selling, you're kind of manipulating people. It might be ethically fine. You know, you're giving honest information. So I don't like the negative connotation of the word manipulation. But my point here is I understand various interrelated systems. And if you look at the CARES Act, it's nothing more than a behavior modification. Having been written in 2018 and then tweaked a few variables in March of 2020, it's like, oh, okay, everybody, stay inside. All the things they did were all manipulation of people. And the financial incentives that we talked about a few minutes ago with regard to remdesivir, baricitinib, we didn't even talk about the ventilator, but yeah, that's a big number too. The incentive of putting COVID on a death certificate, all those things were done on purpose. The COVID numbers were driven and the ventilators were driven to, make the world afraid. I mean, we were numbers 1, 2, and 3, Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, with Belgium a distant fourth, as I mentioned before. How the heck does that happen? And it scared the world. So whenever Europeans or Asians looked, oh, how many deaths are in the world? They tend to look at the United States as a single entity, single nation, even though we're 3,000 miles wide, 1,500 miles tall, north to south. We have 330 million people spread across multiple cultures as well as climates, which all make a difference in how diseases propagate. So if without looking at any of the variables, they look and they say, oh, wow, USA is burning. Oh, look at all these people dying, not realizing that it was just three states in the little corner of the Northeast that had the most to gain. So how do they do it? They do it through incentive programs, which is solicitation of fraud. And they also do it through coercion. The administrators of the hospital said that they would, you know, come down on the doctors hard, take their medical licenses, fire them. The American Board of Internal Medicine, American Board of Family Medicine, and American Board of Pediatrics, you can go right now online and you can find at their website, there's an open letter to all the doctors in the country that if they spread medical misinformation about the vaccine, their license will be suspended or revoked.
Right.
Now, if that ain't coercion, I don't know what is. That's highly illegal. It's been up there for 2 years, maybe closing on 3 years now. It's insane what we allow in our society because nobody understands law or how to take them to task.
But this, your explanation makes a lot of sense to a point where you're talking about this financial incentive infrastructure that was deliberately engineered and then propagated and, of course, obediently followed by those who benefited from it. But that doesn't explain the judicial corruption. You know, the judges presumably don't get paid one way or another. I mean, the way the court case goes, I mean, in reality, we know there's a lot of backroom deals and so on. But how do you explain the fact that they circled the wagons in courtrooms all across America? Do you think that those judges were being issued commands to just make sure that the vaccinations continue no matter what?
Okay. That's at the intersection of law and economics. Okay. So you have a theory of judicial economy where the courts can't handle all the cases coming in, so they have to dismiss some. So they get into a habit and a mode and a behavior that then becomes persistent. And in that behavior, they're dismissing cases based on standing because they don't want to hear them. Now, what happened was there was an increase. I have the numbers in my book. I can't remember them. I wrote the book, you know, like 8 months ago. But let's say around 100,000 extra cases in 2020. I didn't even look at 2021. There's even more. But with that number of extra cases, the system couldn't handle it. So they're using the standing doctrine to dismiss a bunch of cases that otherwise might have been heard in another time. But in that time, through judicial economy, they get rid of them. Now, the problem with that argument, and I plan to, you know, someday maybe I'll write a book on this. I'd like to talk to, say, a Richard Epstein at the Chicago School of Law and Economics, see if we can get together a good crew, put together an economics paper to study this. It, very simply, if they were to adjudicate the first 50 cases, then many of the issues would be solved in law. The interpretation of law with regard to those cases and those issues would be solved, and the subsequent cases would either be brought or not brought based on that law. And so the 100,000 of cases that they're taking time to go through, standing doctrine dismissals, where people file a complaint, you go through a motion to dismiss, an opposition memorandum, and then a decision. All that stuff can be avoided by making decisions on cases early. So do you want to pay later or do you want to pay sooner? The analysis must be done to show that standing doctrine doesn't even make any sense for judicial economy because they're creating more cases that are never solved and people just keep bringing cases and getting dismissed. So there's a systemic problem from a kind of a top level. I hope I answered the question, but a lot of these answers are they're the understanding comes from an understanding over overall systems.
Well, that does help answer it, but I'm also struck by the fact that most of the victims of this are dead and therefore cannot be active, obviously, in bringing these cases. I mean, it's one of the, quote, advantages of the pharmaceutical parties is that they kill their victims and dead people don't sue.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard. I got my picture of my son right here. Yeah, I wanted to sue over my son. He died in a motorcycle accident. And, you know, I wanted to take Yamaha on. But I was happy to wait the 3 years for statute of limitations. And when the day went by, I was relieved because I just don't want to have to deal with that in court. And what I'm telling you is that, you know, for the living people who've lost family members, some of them are angry and they're going to sue. But most of people just like, they're just so devastated like I was. And I sat on the couch. I didn't want to talk to anybody, you know? So it's tough. I know for people who haven't like lost a kid or something, everybody says, oh, I'd do this. Oh, I'd go after them. You don't know what you're going to do.
True.
Your life
true.
Is just shattered. And, you know, for the COVID stuff, when people were dying, like I have kids, records of kids who've died. And the parents not only haven't come forward, some of them are still. I give you an example. A 16-year-old girl running cross country dies of lymphohistiocytic myocarditis while running. And a doctor then gets together some other, I don't know, med students or lower level doctors to write a paper. She advises them. So this doctor, Sarah Goff, was the advisor on the paper. And the paper was about doctors spreading vaccine misinformation on social media. She wants to stop it. She wants to censor them. That's what the paper was about. Well, the 16-year-old girl who died of myocarditis was her daughter. So some people just don't, they won't, it's like a religion to them. They yeah. won't get it through their head. The vaccine might have caused death. And then there's the 7-year-old girl who they said died from COVID. That's why I got the death certificate database. I got it because there's no way that she died from COVID. And when I looked into it, I found a VAERS report. And there's only one 7-year-old girl in Massachusetts matching that exact time frame where she was injected on January 13, 2022 on the VAERS report. The VAERS report ends on the 15th. And it says, you know, she's in bad shape. She her first vaccine was started vomiting in 5 minutes, vomited for 8 to 10 hours. And the second vaccine the report is about, it says stomach pain, 103 degree fever, didn't have a bowel movement for 3 days. And then it ends. The report ends. Well, Cassidy died. The first chapter of my book is Cassidy died on January 18, 5 days after. And her the only thing in part one, causes of death, the only thing in part one is complications of coronavirus 19 viral infection. That's the exact phraseology.
Wow.
Complications of what? I mean, you got to say what the complications are of, right? Is it pneumonia or is it cardiac arrest? I mean, what is it? Nothing else. And only that medical examiner is Michelle Matthews. She's a named defendant in the lawsuit I have. She's the only one to use that phraseology, and she used it a lot. And there, a lot of times there was nothing else listed, which is ridiculous. You know, we're paying these people as to do to record public data, honestly, and they have to certify it with their signature in their capacity, and they're lying.
The real danger moving forward from what you're describing is the fact that this has all been swept under the rug. There hasn't been accountability. There hasn't been any truthful accounting of what's happened. And thus, they can do it again. And with all this buzz now about so-called disease X, I don't know if that's just something made up, a scare story or something real or a bioweapon or what. I don't know. But if something does come along, they already have a playbook. They already have court precedent. They already have the CDC crimes. I mean, they can roll out the same template again at the CDC and just delete all the issues that they don't want to show up in the database. I mean, nothing's stopping them at this point.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's a lot in there. Let me just say that I wrote a bill for New Hampshire. It's now House Bill 1661. Had a hearing on it last week or the week before. I think it was last week. On Thursday, went pretty well. The House member Jason Gerhard, who submitted the bill, he gave me a lot of time to speak to the committee members, and I think I was there 15 minutes or something. Following me was the opposition by the Department of Health and Human Services of New Hampshire, and it was revealing. Yeah. It was revealing because they were asked, how many are you concerned about the amount and ages of excess deaths that are now occurring? And the answer was, well, we go through and we look at data. And and then she asked again, no, aren't you concerned about a 27-year-old or a teenager dying more than normal? And so he then deferred that these are two bureau chiefs. And he deferred to the woman who said, well, before I came here, I had my staff look up code U12.9, and we didn't find any. U12.9 is death or injury from COVID vaccine. Well, the problem is there's no reference to that in the CDC. That code was made by the WHO. I'm not sure the U.S. even adopted it. And if they did, no one has ever used it that I can tell. It's not, you can't find it on the CDC's website.
But I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is the whole point, that the CDC is blocking the capturing of such codes.
Yes.
So if they're citing that and saying, well, you know, we checked with the people who carried out the crimes to see whether they had recorded their crimes in the database and it wasn't there. Therefore, they're innocent. I mean,
well, no, it's worse. Okay. This is how, you know, I said that I would give them a few days to respond after I sent a letter a couple of days ago. I'm saying I'm breaking it on your show here, but Y59. So UK and Germany adopted that code, but in adopting that code, there's a note on it. There's a notation. It says it's a subcategory to Y59. It's like poisoning by, you know, drugs that were given, not like on the street, but, you know, lawfully and in the course of a treatment. So Y59.0 means viral vaccines. T88.1, I told you about that one earlier. So these codes are available. They are used on Massachusetts and Minnesota death certificates. They are spit out by TransAct and Acme software by the CDC. And yet this woman who works for the Department of Health and Human Services of New Hampshire didn't seem to know about that code. And she cited a code that the U.S. doesn't even use.
Oh, wow.
So like you have the whole state like that's who you're relying on. That's your single point of failure in the state of New Hampshire looking for excess deaths in children and young people that shouldn't happen. So in other words, you've turned a blind eye to all these deaths and you're not investigating them at all. And that was their testimony to the House committee. I was shocked. I came home. It took me days to write the 4-page letter. And when I wrote it, like all the excuses they gave were so ridiculous as to why not pass my bill. But what my bill does is it forces the Department of Health to provide transparency to public health data so that the citizens can see what people are dying from.
Well, because of course, but transparency is the very last thing they would ever want to happen because that would destroy their whole business model in pharma and the vaccine industry for sure. I mean, vaccines are inherently dangerous. And, and these vaccines are killing a large number of people and the cover-up is quite real. But, you know, it strikes me that what you're describing here in this interview today is exactly why the public has lost faith in so-called health authorities. If anybody believes anything that the FDA says or the CDC says or a state health authority, you know, you're insane. You can't believe anything they say. They're either incompetent or they're lying. Almost never do they tell the truth, it seems.
Absolutely. And I do want to, the lying is just, it's very frustrating as an engineer, like that the numbers is supposed to be the numbers, but they're not. A lot of them are lies and you have to sift through to find the behavior. That's why people talk about U.S. Statistics. You can't look at it that way because Minnesota is different from Massachusetts, is different from Texas. You have different culture and practice, custom and practice on how to write the words, and the words are translated differently. So whereas in Minnesota, you might have bone and articular cartilage, C4-1 going up, or is it 1-4? I think it's 4-1. In Massachusetts, you have C7-7. And by the way, secondary malignant neoplasm of the lymph nodes in Massachusetts alone is more than 400% of normal in 2023. 400%, 258% in 2022. That's the whole turbo cancer thing. But I do want to get back to the whole vaccine market. So there's good news and bad news. The good news is they threw the vaccine market under the bus. The people who did this, they knew that public confidence would wane in the vaccines and that a lot of people would die. They didn't care. They used it to usher in policies to mess with the election and to take control of the people of the United States. So I don't want to get all conspiracy theory, but you know, you may agree or not. There were things that were done at a higher level where they knew that the vaccines would look bad. In fact, if you ask people who, I know people who took the flu vaccine for the last, 30 years, every year religiously, they won't take another flu vaccine because of the COVID stuff. Right. And this guy was telling me I was wrong and he was following, you know, John Campbell. And I'm like, John Campbell's a year and a half behind me. Stop listening to him.
that's true. John Campbell, he's eventually correct. It just takes a couple of years. Yeah.
I like the guy. I'm sorry. I don't know if he's a competitor. I probably shouldn't have brought him up. But
oh, no, not at all. I like the guy, too. It's like, hey, where have you been? You know?
Yeah. He does a really good job communicating to people over 60 years old. Really does. And that's my group, man. I'm going to be 60 this year. You know, a lot of people I worked with are in their 60s. They listen to him. And I hope he can come up to speed because, Mike, we only scratched the surface of what I have. I can look at every single cause of death. What I did is I found that the respiratory causes were up in 2020. This is the first thing I did. I wrote a script to highlight which year I had columns, 2020 and 2021. Which would go into higher excess. And when I put all the codes in, there was a, and I had it conditionally turn yellow if it was the higher one of the 2 years. Well, all the J codes, which are respiratory, they all went high in 2020. Then all of a sudden in 2021, I look at the circulatory, which begin with I, and the blood, which begin with D. Those are all high in 21. Huh. Everything just switched. It's like, okay, wait a minute. If you look at the spectrum profile of a disease, I call it the symptom spectrum profile, and you see that all of a sudden on a year boundary, when we introduce a vaccine, the excess deaths go from more respiratory to more circulatory and blood. It's not a disease that did that. Diseases don't say, okay, it's 2021 now. We're going to change how we kill the human body.
Right.
It's ridiculous. So there's that, the age spectrum profile. This is the thesis of my book. I said this, the symptom spectrum profile, the age spectrum profile, and the seasonality profile. So when in the year do people die? You know, and respiratory in the winter. I'm in New England. So, you know, the further north you go, the more seasonality curves take effect, and the more almost like sinusoidal deaths curves occur in the upper ages. Right. So with all that analysis, I determined that everything changed, and there's no way it can be COVID. It can't be COVID.
Okay.
It has to be the vaccine.
Well, I'm really glad that you've done so much analysis, and I look forward to taking a look at your book. And I want to remind the audience that your website is therealcdc.com. That's it, right? Yep. Therealcdc.com, and that's the name of your book coming out shortly, in just a few days. We're out of time, but I want to thank you, John, for joining us today. This has been a really enlightening conversation. I hope we get a chance to talk again.
Thank you much. I can talk for 4 hours.
Well, we've just done one, so we'll work on the second one coming up soon. Yeah. But I want to see your report. I mean, what you're sending to the attorneys general. So send that to my producer, if you would, please. And I'd love to take a look at that. And maybe from that, depending on what the AGs do, maybe we could get you back on for a follow-up.
That sounds great. We'd love to do that.
We got
to get the word.
Well, we'll do it. We'll have editorial coverage as well. So, all right. Well, thank you, John. Pleasure to meet you today.
You.
Thanks for your time.
Too. Thanks.
All right.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Okay, folks, John Bodwin there, a fascinating man who's really passionate about looking at this and trying to uncover the truth. We need more people like that across America, if not for the corruption of the judicial system like we talked about, and the medical system and the pharmaceutical giants and so on, we would have already been, we would expose all this already. But here we are living in interesting times. But thank you for watching today here on Brighteon.com. Of course, I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, uncensored, as you can see here. Feel free to repost this interview on other channels or other platforms as well. I just give a link back to John's website, therealcdc.com. Thank you for watching today. God bless you all, and take care. Today's segment is brought to you by Goldbacks, which is what I'm holding in my hands right here. This is a stack of Goldbacks, and these contain actual verified physical gold in every one of the goldbacks. These are labeled ones, and they contain 1/1000th of a troy ounce of gold. It's actually built into the note itself. You can find more information about this at my website, verifiedgoldbacks.com, which is our affiliate site. We do earn a small percentage on your purchases here that helps support the program. This shows my laboratory testing results where I tested using a kiln method and an ICP-MS mass spec method and also an acid stone method. I tested the gold mass, there it is on an analytical balance, and the gold purity for each of the different bills that are available here, the denominations. Now, goldbacks are available in ones, fives, tens, 25s, and 50s. And what's amazing about them is that they make gold spendable and highly divisible. You know, normally you can't take a gold coin and just hand somebody 1/1000th of a coin. That's almost impossible to carry out. But with goldbacks here, I can do that. This is 1/1000th of an ounce of gold. In my hands, verified, I know the gold is actually in here. You can melt it down and get the gold. And so I can give this to somebody as a gift or as payment or in exchange, and it makes gold spendable. And unlike crypto, it doesn't require the power grid to function, doesn't require the internet to function. This is off-grid money. It's outside the banking system, and it doesn't require electricity to function. This is a stack of 100 of the Goldback ones, and you can buy these stacks at verifiedgoldbacks.com. Let me show you actually the recovery percentages here. If you scroll down, oh, there's some of the gold foil that you get when you melt a 50. That's what it looks like in my hand there. This is one of the kilns that we used. And continuing, here's the recoveries right here. We recovered 102% on the minimum and about 107% maximum from these Goldback bills. So in every case, we recovered more than 100%. And that's what these masses are here. Phase two, this is the final mass. And it shows you how that's more than what was expected. So you're actually getting all the gold that's promised and a little bit more. And here's the purity numbers. We found very small parts per million traces of magnesium, iron, copper, zinc, silver, and lead, which shows that this is over 24 karat gold. And by the way, this is always very common in gold. You're going to get some impurities, and that's why it's called 24 karat and not 100% pure gold. Anyway, we did acid stone test results and so on. You can check out all of this at verifiedgoldbacks.com. Get these into your hands. They're gorgeous to look at. People absolutely love them. They love them as gifts. And again, it's instantly spendable assets with real physical gold in them, which means you don't have to have, you know, faith and trust in a government for these to hold value. No government issues these. No government even recognizes them as currency. No, they're gold, which transcends every government and has outlasted every government in the history of the world. Gold will be here when the dollar collapses. Gold will be here when the yen collapses, when the euro collapses, when the United States of America as a government collapses. Gold will still be here, and gold will still hold value. So do your own research. Don't take this as financial advice, of course. I'm not your financial advisor, but I'm adding these to my own preparedness activities because I recognize the practical utility of these. And in my experience, everybody that I've handed them to has instantly recognized their value, and frankly, they want more of them. So check it out, verifiedgoldbacks.com. Thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams. Take care.